and welcome to The Learning Curve, the radio show about learning where we focus on how to be successful at university. I'm Tim Podolsky.
And I'm Monique DeMonte. The Learning Curve is produced on original lands of Anishinaabeg, Ininuik, and Sininuik, Dakota Oyate and Dene, and on the national homeland of the Red River Métis. We respect the treaties that were made on these territories. We acknowledge the harms and mistakes of the past, and we dedicate ourselves to move forward in partnership with Indigenous communities in a spirit of reconciliation and collaboration.
Hello, Tim.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm enjoying the fall weather. And it's October, so I've noticed that students seem to have settled into some routines. I've noticed a little bit less traffic in the hallways. I think students are finding their way to classes more directly. They're going to study spaces immediately after class. So less traffic in the hallways, but one thing I have noticed is more traffic in my email box. How about you?
Yes, lots of emails.
And so today we're going to talk about something that I think is really important for students to know about, and it's about email etiquette at university. We are entering into sort of our professional lives as students, right? So it's time for students to learn and practice some email etiquette, so ways of being polite, clear, making use of this communication tool.
Yeah, I think also one thing I notice is that sometimes students, maybe that's not necessarily their preferred mode of communication. It's not something that they necessarily think to check all the time when they first start university, and it is how the university communicates with students, and so it's pretty important. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. We do sometimes meet students who have run into trouble because they failed to check their email, which provides important information about things like paying your tuition, submitting your assignments, getting ready to graduate, these kinds of things. This is how the university conducts business. So whether you're a student who's very familiar with using email or it's not something you've done before, this is a time when it's time for you to learn how to use this this mode of communication. So we're going to talk a little bit about what makes for good emails. Effective emails are precise. They're typically kind of more formal in their language use and ideally don't have too many errors in them. So there's some basic components that we'll talk about.
Yeah, and maybe we should give a shout out to John. John Malik.
Yeah, John Malik was instrumental in putting together a list of email etiquette tips that is available on the Academic Learning Center webpage. So if you'd like to follow up on this information, you can go to the Academic Learning Center webpage and look for the email etiquette tip sheet. So, some basic components of email etiquette: always use your UM email. So that means your username at myumanitoba.ca, and or use UM Learn to email your instructors or any other university community members. This is really important. We actually get direction from the university not to engage in email conversations with non-UM emails. It has to do with the UM policies related to privacy, particularly student privacy. We won't email you at hot stuff at Yahoo because we don't really know who that is.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, all the spam and phishing scams and with what happened last year at U of W, you know, I think there's a lot of heightened awareness of kind of where is this email coming from? Because I do get a lot of emails from students and I'm like, I don't even know if this is a student at U of M.
Exactly.
Right?
And we cannot engage with non-UM student emails because we protect student privacy really carefully. It's really important to us that only the student knows information about the student. So always use your UM email account. And next step is please use a clear subject line that states the purpose of the email.
Right. And the other thing that we should talk about, too, is I think when you're kind of trying to address the... If you're writing an email to your instructor, for example, a lot of times people don't know how to address their instructor, right? So they might, you know, kind of wonder about that. Usually your instructor might tell you in advance, okay, you can call me Professor X or, you know, Mr. or Mrs. or whatever. And so I usually tell my students kind of, you know, they can call me Tim. I'm comfortable with that. But if you're not comfortable with that, then, you know, just use some kind of greeting, but something a little bit more formal as opposed to just, hey.
Yeah.
Right?
And if you're in doubt, it is probably better to err on the side of being overly formal, because your instructor can then invite you to use their first name if they would like that. But there are lots of good reasons why instructors might prefer a more formal address. You know, people need to have boundaries in their relationships. And one of the ways we might do this is by, you know, creating a formal relationship between a student and an instructor. So if your instructor asks to be called Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones, or in my case, Dr. DeMonte, that's perfectly reasonable and makes a lot of sense for some folks. So just as we're doing our best to be, you know, calling students by their names as they prefer, then, of course, we would like the same thing.
Yeah, and then the other thing that's important in an email is to make sure you identify yourself, right?
Yes.
So,
yeah. An instructor might have two very large class sections. So there might be 150 students in each class, and hey, professor, we talked after class yesterday, might not really identify you very clearly. So
yeah, and I also find a lot of times students will come up to me in class and mm-hmm. they'll ask something like, oh, can I get more time on X, or, you know,
on an assignment?
Yeah,
or
and I always tell them, can you send me an email, because I don't really know who they are, I don't know what their name is, and I might forget.
Yeah.
Right? And so if I get the email, I have a record of it, it's written, and I have their name in the email. So
and it's time and date stamped, so you know, yes, I did grant this extension, and you have a formal record of that.
Yeah, and so that's why I ask for the email. Sometimes I think maybe that's they're wondering why I need an email, but that's usually what I do when someone asks me in person.
Mm-hmm. So generally that means you should include your full name, your student number, the class, and the section you're in. It's also sometimes helpful to remind your instructor the day of the week and the time of your class. Again, instructors may be teaching multiple sections of the same class. They may be teaching multiple classes. So the more you can help them identify who you are, the better.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other thing here, it says that we should use a easy-to-read font and something professional. I would just recommend using the default fonts in Outlook. You should, you know, obviously check your email to make sure there's no spelling mistakes and that it's kind of written in a formal style. And, you know, normally you wouldn't put emojis in an email, that kind of thing. It's a little bit different from a text, right?
Yeah.
Texts can be more informal. You don't, I would say a lot of people don't worry about commas and periods in text, but an email is a more formal kind of way of communicating, so you should check for those kind of mistakes and things like that. And then I think what's also important is to give the person some time to respond to your email.
Yeah,
right?
I think that we're pretty used to people responding to texts virtually immediately.
Right.
And that's just not the case with email, particularly, again, instructors may be teaching multiple classes, multiple sections. They're at meetings across campus. They're not checking their email 24/7. Most instructors have limits to when they will look at their email. For example, they may not look at email over the weekend, so don't expect that.
And they're getting a lot of emails too, right? And
mm-hmm.
so they may not know kind of how to respond immediately, right? So
Sometimes people need a little time to think about it.
Yeah. What would you say is kind of the normal response time?
I would say not to even think about it for 48 business hours.
So 2 days?
Like 2 business days.
So if you don't get a response same day,
don't panic.
That wouldn't be kind of unheard of.
No, and if you send an email on Friday at 4 6:30.
You'll get a response maybe Monday at some point.
Monday at earliest,
maybe
really.
Monday afternoon.
Maybe even Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that would not be unreasonable. So
kind of like banking.
Yeah, a little bit.
Two business days.
Yep. So if, however, it's been 5 business days and you haven't heard back, it is acceptable to send a polite email asking if your email was received. It is reasonable at that point. Yeah. And sometimes it's necessary. Honestly, if you have 300 students emailing you, that's a lot of emails, and it is possible that they may get pushed down the list, and it is possible for a human being to miss an email. Be patient and kind, and a gentle reminder after 4 or 5 days.
And that goes both ways, because there's an expectation that you're checking your emails roughly every 2 days, or, you know, I'd make sure you check it every day.
I would too, yeah.
Campus might be shut down for some reason, and, you know, your building is closed, and if you're not checking your email, you might come
waste your time traveling. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's important to make sure that you've got these basics covered, and you want to be mindful of tone. It's kind of a balance between formal and friendly, but do avoid any jokes. Email doesn't really allow for us to hear tone, so keep it sort of strictly business.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing would be kind of making sure you use clear and precise language in your email. You know, what is your concern, right? Why are you sending the email? What is it that you are hoping to get as a response? Do you have a question that's specific that you can ask?
I just want to jump in, because this is actually a pet peeve of mine, is like, if you send an email saying, hey, can we meet? That's great, but what's really useful is, can we meet on Tuesday at 9:30 or on Wednesday at 11? Provide some specific dates and times. I don't need us to email back and forth 30 times just to find a date and time that works for both of us. Give me 3 or 4 options, and I'll pick one, and that's when we'll meet.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you get emails from students who miss class, and a common email that you might get from a student would be something like, I didn't come to class. What did I miss?
Or did I miss anything important?
Yeah, did I miss anything?
And that's kind of a challenging email for me to respond to. Yes, of course, the content.
Well, you missed class, right?
Yeah, the course we discussed is important.
I don't know how to respond to that email when I get it. And so I usually say, okay, here's what we covered. And I'll say, you know, review the notes and make sure you read the textbook. But then give me a specific question, right?
Yep.
What is it about
the content that was covered?
You might not understand, right? Is there a specific question you have about that content?
Some more successful emails I've received from students who missed class have been, dear instructor, unfortunately, I was sick and was unable to attend class on Tuesday, date and time. I have since reviewed the lecture slides that were on UM Learn, and I also asked a friend in the class for their notes. I have a very specific question about a very specific
What does this concept actually mean? Can you explain that? Because otherwise, I can't summarize my lecture in an email. Right?
No.
That's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know, an hour and a half lecture potentially, right? You can't really put that in an email. So
right.
What is it specifically that you need help with, right?
Mm-hmm. I think I'd also recommend, it's perfectly reasonable that a student might raise a concern in an email. If you're doing so, try to remain positive and calm, and also give yourself some time to reflect. It's generally not a good idea to send an email while you're hot and angry at 10 o'clock at night. Maybe sleep on it and wait, and then go back to the email, go ahead and draft it. And then go back to it and think about, how does this sound and How am I presenting myself here?
Yeah, sometimes when you're angry or it's a hot button mm-hmm. issue and you're responding to the email right away, it's better to just sort of sit on it for 24 hours. That's I think a good rule of thumb. And you talked about using the draft feature as well. That's one of my email hacks. I use that all the time. Yep. I've often got 7-8 emails sitting in my draft folder.
Is that all?
Well,
I have too many in my draft.
Yeah,
right
but even there'll be times where I've got to send this email in a couple of weeks or a couple of mm-hmm. months, and I know it's an important email, so I'll draft it and then I'll just leave it there, and then I can review it and make sure everything's okay.
Yeah. So yeah, again, an email. I think it's really important to explain if you are identifying an issue or a problem to sort of provide a little context and identify what steps you've already taken to address it or what you've already done. And again, as you said before. Are you just telling me this for information? That's all. That's fine. That's sometimes useful. Or is there some sort of response or action that you are requesting? So maybe offer some suggestions about solutions or resolutions, and be clear about what action or outcome you are hoping for. That doesn't mean you're going to get it. Don't be too demanding, but at least give an indication of what is it that you'd like to see happen.
Right. So let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk more about the exciting topic of emails.
Disappointing news getting me down.
All right, and we're back. And here's the question that we're thinking about now is, should you send that email at all? We talked about maybe taking a night to sleep on it before sending it and using the draft function in Outlook email so that you can look at it again in the morning with a clearer set of eyes. So sometimes email is the quickest way to address a topic, but sometimes there are questions that are much better discussed in person. So what do you think, Tim?
I feel like when I'm writing an email, if I'm spending a lot of time trying to write this email and craft it, and I'm thinking, oh, how do I write this? And if it's really long, I mean, we talked about earlier, sometimes you send a long email because there's information in there.
You just need to make sure everyone knows all of the details.
These points, right? That's a little different. But if you're trying to communicate with someone and you're spending a lot of time drafting or writing an email, that's, to me, that's an indication that you need to go talk to them in person or pick up the phone, and it's a conversation that needs to happen as opposed to an email.
If your email is a request for specific information like a deadline, an assignment detail, or one specific concept from a class, that seems pretty reasonable. But asking for a complete summary of what was covered in the class you missed is not a reasonable email. Email is a way that you might submit an assignment if that's how your instructor wants you to upload them or upload to UMLearn. Again, if it's complicated and it's going to require discussion back and forth, definitely an in-person meeting is better.
Yeah, and we also, we're going to talk a bit about kind of some types of emails that you see that are kind of maybe try to avoid these circumstances, and one of them is the too much information email.
Right, like I started out earlier just talking about how it's important to include the details, who you are, what class you're in, what day and time. So those details, yeah.
That's important.
But the details, I don't really need the details about your specific illness and your symptoms. If you want to let your instructor know that you were too sick to attend class, just say, too sick to attend class.
Yeah, you don't need to list kind of, you know, how bad your fever is or kind of, you know,
symptoms.
What the coughing fits are like.
And how long they last. Yeah. Like, I don't need that much
detail. I think
detail.
Sometimes people want to kind of make sure that the instructor knows how grave the situation is because they need more time or something like that. But for me, I just need to know, I'm sick. I can't be there. Can I have more time on the paper?
Yep.
Usually the answer is yes, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to sell me on it.
Yeah, no, I, and I'm not convinced more by more details about your illness. So, all right. So, are there any other pet peeves that you have about emails?
You want to do hacks first, or
sure,
pet peeves?
Sure.
So, hacks. These are things that we think, you know, help us with productivity and make our lives more efficient by doing these things. I think you were talking about checking at certain times of the day.
Yeah. One of the things that happens, of course, is that your email just keeps rolling in. And so I set aside dedicated time for checking email, specific blocks of time throughout the day where that's all I'm doing and that's what I'm going to do. So I check first thing in the morning, either before or after, like, 11:30, again at 3:30, maybe at 4.
You could even apply that rule to text messages, you know. And what I would say is really important is emails are somebody else's agenda, right? Like, it's somebody else's priorities. So if you want to get work done in terms of time management, you have to guard your own priorities. And answering emails is responding to other people's needs as opposed to dealing with your own needs, right?
Yeah. So if your need is to study and someone's emailing you with information about, I don't know, the new product that you should buy, try to set aside time so that it isn't interfering with your thinking and studying time.
And on that note, too, another hack would be to unsubscribe from spam emails. If, you know, you signed up for a newsletter and you're getting, you know, I've done that before and you just send me too many emails.
Yeah, I wanted the 10% discount in the store and now I regret giving them my email. I also use block. I block senders. I seem to get an awful lot of emails in that are from, like, international companies that I really have had no business with, and I don't know if they're spamming or they're phishing, but I just block them. If they're I mean, they're not in English.
And there are some people you can't block. Like, I don't think you're able to block the university. And
you shouldn't.
Yeah. But if you are getting a lot of emails from people that are maybe more, like, for example, asbestos abatement notifications or
something. What I do there is I don't block them, but I do put them into a folder. So I've used automation to help me maintain my focus time, right?
Yeah, rules.
Yeah, so I apply rules. And it might take you a few minutes to set it up at the beginning, but you'll definitely get that time back once you implement it. So I have folders that are set up. So I read newsletters that are related to my academic work, my scholarship, but I don't necessarily need to read them when they first come in. So they all go into folders, and then I look at them during designated reading times. Another hack for increasing my productivity related to email is, again, clear subject lines. I do that not only for the person receiving the email, but I actually do it for my own use. Because if I have an email subject line that says a few things, I don't know what it is. But if I use some keywords that I'm going to look for, again, like email about hiring student staff, then when I go to search through my email for hiring information, that email will pop up for me. So I try to be really careful and think about the gift I'm giving my future self.
Right.
By using a really clear email subject line.
More just to organize your
exactly.
own emails.
Yeah.
So the other thing I would say is when I'm looking at email, if it's a simple email
mm-hmm.
that can be dealt with quickly, I'll answer it right away.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something more complicated, I might just kind of flag it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know, okay, that's something I'm going to deal with tomorrow morning
mm-hmm.
or the next day, next time I check my email, if it needs more time and attention
mm-hmm.
and needs to be nuanced a bit more, I will flag it and deal with it later. But if it's easy,
like a one word, two
yeah,
word,
like
yes,
you know, just send the email,
yeah.
right? And then it's done and dealt with.
So there are some suggestions that are widely known. And one of them is the only handle it once. And so they use the four D's. Either do it, defer it, drop it, or delegate it.
Okay.
And so, like you said, if it's a very quick yes or a no or a Tuesday at 3, then just do it. Sometimes you might need to think about it a little bit more, or it's too early to respond to something, so then I defer it. And then what I do for that is I then calendarize that. I put that immediately into my calendar, reply to email about such and such on such and such a date.
Right.
Sometimes I defer it and then I drop it. I find that if I just leave something for a day, someone else will respond. It doesn't always have to be me. Sometimes the problem goes away because things have moved on, or delegate it. So as a student, you may not have a lot of opportunities to delegate tasks, but in our professional lives, Tim, you and I do have tasks that we can delegate to other folks.
Email pet peeves. Do you have any email pet peeves?
I feel like I am hammering away on it, but vague subject lines really is challenging for me. So that would be my pet peeve. How about you?
We're running out of time, but mine would be just when people don't use reply all. If you're trying to loop in three
mm-hmm.
people on a conversation and you have, you know, three people there and they don't reply all, they just reply to you directly. That would be my pet peeve.
Really quickly, I want to just suggest that folks engage with Student Success Month activities. Please see online for all of the events. There are more than 50 of them going on this month. And in particular, I want to hype the student support fair going on right now at Megazy Agamic. That'll be going on from 10 to 2 today, and it's an opportunity for students to find out about a whole variety of supports available to them all in one place.
Yeah, I'm going to head over there and see what's going on.
Great.
Right away.
All right. Thanks very much. We'll see you next time.
This has been The Learning Curve. Thanks for tuning in. Looking forward to having you join us on our next episode.
The Academic Learning Center provides free supports to all UM students. Go to the Academic Learning Center website for more information and to access supports.